And on the far side of the arena, in the opposite channel, the word from Kath had come over the radio in JB's wag. The armorer turned to Jenny, who had previously volunteered to be lookout.
Ready, Jenny?
As I'll ever be.
The hellbender quickly took a handheld radio from Mildred and left the wag. Like Jack, she had to scan the sheer rock wall for a suitable place to begin her climb, and was soon aware of the less-than-reliable nature of the rocks. But when she finally reached the top, she turned and looked down along the length of the channel, and noticed something that Jack had missed during his ascent. The inward curve of the rock continued all the way along the length of the channel, forming a kind of tunnel for any storm forces that may hit the outcrop. She looked up at the gathering storm and hoped that they would be able to leave the channel before it hit. Jenny was quickly able to pick her way along the irregular pathway cut into the top of the rock and find herself a place to hide and observe. Now they just had to wait for the trade-off to begin. The lead wag from Charity stood at the entrance to the arena. On the opposite side was the lead wag from Summerfield. Both had their engines ticking over. Both were waiting for the other to move first.
Come on, you bastards. We don't have much time.
In the Summerfield wag, Baron Tad Hutter was feeling much the same. So too was Elias Tulk, but for different reasons. Hutter glanced up at the gathering sky and frowned.
That asshole Jurgensen better stop moving soon or else this storm is going to make things impossible.
Maybe he's waiting for you to make the first move. Maybe you should, because it sure looks as though he isn't gonna.
Shit, I don't want to give him any ground at all. But what the hell?
The Baron indicated to Tulk to put the wagon to gear and begin to edge into the arena. On the far side, Baron L. Jorgensen grinned as he saw the lead Summerfield wag start into the arena.
Okay, let's do it.
The two convoys began to move slowly toward the middle of the arena, each crawling along to try to keep pace with the other, neither side willing to reach the middle before the other. The lead wags in both convoys stop-started in a stuttering procession to reach a point where they were about 30 yards apart when Hutter signaled to Tulk to stop. As his wag shuddered to a halt, so Jurgensen signaled his driver to stop. And the two convoys now sat again, facing each other. They were both far enough into the arena for the rear wagon each train to be well within the outcrop's boundaries. There was plenty of space behind each for the hellbenders to pen them in before beginning their attack. From their promontory positions, Jack and Jenny watched the wags proceed with mixed feelings. Jack was immobile, his red eyes fixed on the two trains, waiting patiently. Patience wasn't a virtue for Jenny, though, as she shifted uncomfortably on her perch and divided her attention between the convoys and the sky. She was careful not to disturb or dislodge any of the rocks that surrounded the small perch she had made for herself, but found it difficult to remain motionless. She felt itchy for action of some kind as the minutes ticked by and no one moved in any of the wags. But that didn't mean that nothing was happening.
Get the women shackled and get them out in the open.
This is it then, eh, Aisha?
Yeah, let's get this done.
You'll never get away with it. You do know that, don't you? Even if this attack from your so-called allies happens, chances are that you'll all still buy the farm. Is that really what you want? Go through with it, keep your heads down, and all you get is shafted by the men of Summerfield until you make them some babies. Is that so bad?
Don't you get it yet, Stoop? We don't want that. We don't want to be told what to do. We want to have lives where we aren't pieces of shit to be used and abused. And frankly, we'd rather get chilled than go through with it. Your way, we die a long, slow death for sure. But we stick this out and fight, then maybe we got a chance of getting away, and that chance is worth more than you could ever give.
That's a lot of words for choosing to get yourself killed.
Which is something you would have done a long time ago if not for the fact that we need you to lead us out.
Claudette unloaded the Uzi. She tossed the empty blaster to the driver, and he caught it before it hit him full in the face.
You can take this, but remember that I've got a hand blaster, and I can draw it real quick if I have to, understand me?
Yeah, I got you.
Good. Now fucking move!
The driver clambered over the seat and slid into the rear of the wag. Aisha gave the broken-nosed Sekhman an empty blaster and joined Claudette in appearing to secure herself in the shackles. But she still had the knife in the palm of her hand, Claudette had a hand blaster up the sleeve of her shirt, and some of the other women had the liberated blasters concealed about their bodies.
Do it! Now!
The broken-nosed sick man slid out of the front seat, opened the door, and jumped out. He ran around to the back and opened the rear of the wag. Gesturing with the empty Uzi, he beckoned for the women to get out. They did, with Ayesha in the lead and Claudette somewhere in the middle, looking behind her all the way to keep an eye on the driver, who was acting as second set guard. When they were all clear of the back door, the rear guard closed the door to hide the chilled body within from the eyes of the sec wag behind them.
Keep it hard, ladies.
All eyes were now trained on them. There was an immense pressure to appear normal as they were seemingly led to their exchange.
Same goes for you, assholes, too.
Don't fucking worry about us.
From the surrounding wags, sec guards had appeared, climbing onto the roofs of their wags and training their blasters on the opposing convoy. They didn't look down at the procession of women as they passed. Over in the opposite convoy, Hutter watched the women as they started to walk along the side of the convoy. He was almost visibly salivating as he caught sight of Ayesha. Tulk, seated beside him, could almost read his mind and felt physically sick for a moment until he considered the fate that was about to befall his baron.
Ready the men.
Gotcha.
Tulk gladly swung out of his seat and away from his loathed leader. He opened his door and jumped down from his wag, signaling to the other wags as he did so. Without radio communications, Hutter had to rely on one man sending out a signal, and Tulk was glad of that. At his signal, the Summerfield sec men took their places, some keeping watch on their opposing number, others mounting guard over the primitive flamethrowers erected over the seed crops and supplies. From his position, Jack watched the women being led from the wag and wondered what was going on. They were supposed to be in the wag that had brought them and secure it. He waited to see if Jenny would make some sort of signal, suspecting that the Hellbenders wouldn't care about a promise made to Ayesha in return for her help. When no signal to attack came, he wasn't surprised. The albino teen didn't know what to do. Should he make the signal himself and precipitate the attack, or should he wait to see what Jenny would do? He had a suspicion that she would leave it until the Summerfield sec were unloading their side of the trade, thus leaving everyone out in the open and much more vulnerable. And much as he regretted what appeared to be selling Ayesha down the river, the hunter in him said that this course of action made much more sense. But Jenny had only had part of her attention on the movement below. The movement above was more immediately disturbing. The clouds had started to move in violently, and the wisps of breeze were snaking down to begin stirring the dust around her. The change in air pressure made Jack look up.
Damn.
Down on the arena floor, Claudette looked up as she felt breeze stir her plaits, and then down at the whirling eddies of dust that started to move around her feet. Her eyes met Ayesha's.
Your friends better fucking hurry.
As the first load of seed crops were unloaded and the women readied themselves for the approach of the Summerfield sec, the dust began to rise from the floor of the arena to swirl around their lower legs.
Shit!
Go! Everybody go!
The wind began to howl through the jagged gaps at the top of the rocks and swept through the entrances at each end of the arena, conflicting currents meeting in the center and lifting great whirling eddies of dust and grit that stung the eyes and coruscated the skin. The noise from the beginning storm was enough to drown out the sound of the wags hidden in the channels at each side as they gunned their engines into life and began to roll through the narrow rock tunnels to circle out of the exits, turn, and make their attack. JB waited until Jenny had slid down the rock and into the wag, breathless and already covered in a thin film of dust from the atmosphere outside. The woman settled breathlessly in her seat.
You okay, Jenny?
Yeah, just about. That's a wicked dust storm blowing up out there. And I figured the worst of it may just blow through these holes. So we should get out as soon as possible.
Get this thing going, JB.
Already there, Millie.
JB punched the wag forward. It was going to be a delicate balance between speed and getting out of the channel in one piece. Already the storm had increased in intensity. Sand and grit was now hitting the windshield of the wag with a loud, clattering rain. JB couldn't see where he was going. If he took the narrow passage too fast, he was running the risk of driving straight into the rock. Sweat stood out on his forehead as he concentrated on keeping the vehicle straight, trying to define the darker shapes of the rock walls through the opaque mist.
Fuck! Take it easy, John. You're doing fine.
But even as Mildred said it, she was aware of the tension among the hellbenders in the WAG. Lonnie was encountering exactly the same problem trying to negotiate his way out of the opposing tunnel. Carell had already started moving his WAG before Jack was down and into the WAG driven by Lonnie.
What's hurry?
I guess Papa Joe wants to get out of there before that storm gets to be too much.
That's all very well, but we can't risk too much speed in these conditions. Not if we want to get out in one piece.
You saying you don't want to fight, Danny? After all this time and when you finally get the chance?
Kath was hyped up, fidgeting in her seat, making Danny wonder if he would be the first to be chilled if he said a word out of place.
My dear girl, we all want to come out of this little contretemps without being chilled. And we want a chance to actually face the enemy. All young Danny was doing was pointing out the folly of more haste, less speed. It was not a reflection on his, or indeed our, courage.
Kath looked at Doc, suddenly still in her seat. She had no idea what Doc was talking about, and the confusion temporarily calmed her.
Shit! Rockfall!
Lonnie swerved the heavy wag as the boulders started to fall from above. The howling gale had dislodged large stones from the top of the rock wall. They began to tumble into the narrow channel, clattering onto the wags, hitting the ground in front of them, and forcing the drivers to take evasive action.
Let us hope it leaves us enough space to negotiate this obstacle course and get out of here.
Ah, fuck!
Lonnie swung the wheel to try to dodge the obstacles, ignoring the loud bangs and crashes on the roof, hoping that they wouldn't hit the windshield and shatter it.
Great! We'll be fucked before we even get out of here!
Have some faith in our sturdy pilot.
Thanks, but I'm not sure there's enough faith in the world to get through this shit.
In the lead wag, Carell was also cursing the sudden rockfalls.
God damn! Fate cannot do this to us. Not when we've come so far, my love.
Is he talking to that damned box lover?
I think so.
Carell swerved his wag in and out of the falling rocks that he could see through the sudden dust storm. Ryan looked over at Christy, whose hair was clinging to her scalp and neck as if they were trying to envelop her. The tendrils of Titian red curled around her pale flesh.
Hang on. We get through this, the rest is going to be easy.
Or easier, at any rate.
Nuke and hell, but the fates are on our side after all. We're out. We're fucking out.
Looking through the windshield, Ryan could see that the storm's violence appeared to have abated a little. There was now sky and light visible through the particles of dust, dirt, and rock that swirled in the air. They were clear of the tunnel, and Ryan braced himself as Carell put his foot down and took the wag out into the empty desert with a sudden burst of speed before swinging the wheel with an incredible force, turning the wag at a tight angle so that it almost lifted onto two wheels.
Fireblast. Carell, I hope the other drivers are as good as you. Otherwise, we'll lose wags like this.
The gaunt man turned his head for a second and gave a ghoulish grin.
They can do it. I just hope your JB is up to it.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.